This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, Master Connector of Aftermarket Professionals, Carm Capriato here, and welcome to the Town Hall Academy 222, 10 Things That Require Zero Talent. What makes a person successful? Is it luck? Is it because they are born to be leaders? Can success be taught or even learned? Too often we get caught up in the day-to-day grind. We lose focus on the big picture called life. And in this episode, we're going to go back to the basics and discuss 10 things that require zero talent that everyone can accomplish. Practice each one. You'll be amazed at the changes that follow. Hey, grateful for the sponsors, Shopware and Shop Marketing Pros, for this episode. Now, do you remember the 90s? Your shop management system does, I bet you. Printing paper, shuffling clipboards, leaving voicemails. Grab a paper clip while you're at it and pull some trouble codes. The check engine light is flashing and your profits are running lean. Hey, learn how Shopware can help you. Get a demo at getshopware.com. Hey, when someone searches for a shop, who are they finding? Your competitors? Well, it should be you. The good people over at Shop Marketing Pros know how to drive website traffic and make Google work for you. On the web at shopmarketingpros.com. Hey, you can listen or watch the video of this episode and also find the key talking points at remarkableresults.biz/A222. The show notes make a great meeting agenda. Share this episode with your family, friends, and colleagues. You know, sometimes all we need is a little boost and a gentle reminder to always choose positivity. And remember this, be kind to one another. Hey, let's talk about who my panel is here today. Let's bring them up. Doug Grills, AutoStream Car Care, the Baltimore, Washington area with 7 locations. Hello, Doug.
Hello, Carm. How are you?
I'm great, man. Glad to have you here. Appreciate you spending some time here with us. Clint White is here, owner, service advisor, coach, shop consultant with Shop Vision, ASE Master Tech, Undercar Specialist Service Writer Certifications. A cool guy to hang with. Thank you for being here, Clint.
Oh, thanks, Carm. I appreciate it.
Love your advice. Love your wisdom. And Mike De La Cruz, his first time. I've known Mike for a long time. In fact, I saw a picture of you and I at a couple of conferences. We've taken some, Mike. In fact, it was ASA Colorado last year. I saw that picture recently, and we were just shooting the breeze, having a good time. Mike is the national sales manager at Broadly. And, you know, Broadly sponsors the Carmcast that I do. So thanks for being here, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Carm. Hey, everybody.
So we picked out, maybe I picked out, or somehow we picked out. Now, if you've ever been, you know, spend time in the real world, you'll see signs like this in businesses. You know, 10 things that require zero talent. And I bumped into one recently, and I said, wow, that's going to be a really cool show. Who do we pick to come on and talk about it? So we've got these 10 things, and everyone's going to take it in round robin. Mike, we're going to start with you. The first one on the list is being on time. No talent, huh?
Right. This is actually a perfect topic for me because I'm the guy that shows up 30 minutes early to a party when nobody's there but the house. So
my wife hates when people come early.
I know. I'm that guy. But hopefully by that time there's some appetizers sitting out. But I was thinking about this topic here, and you know, there's a bigger picture to this. I think we've all been at companies where we couldn't wait to get to work. You know, we would even get there early, right? When I first started with Broadly, we had an office in downtown Oakland, and I would set my alarm clock for 3:15, and I'd be out the door by 3:40. Part of it, yeah, was to try and pass the nasty Bay Area traffic that we have out here. But the bigger reason was because I couldn't wait to be there with my team and really get the day started. On the flip side, you know, there's companies that, you know, we probably have to hit the snooze button a time or two, and we sort of like dread having to go to work. So, you know, if that happens and it's a pattern, then employee really needs to think about whether or not that company's the right fit for them. They have to really ask themselves if they're happy. I guess to some degree, like the owner holds some level of responsibility in that and making sure that morale is at its highest level. They need to create an environment where people actually want to be there and be on time. So to kind of add to that, there's almost a sense of anxiety, like when we have to rush, and nobody wants to feel that, right? So many of us, I'm sure at one point or another, like we've accidentally overslept. What happens? Like we jump out of bed, we jet out of the door and, you know, show up with like glossy eyes and, you know, maybe some bedhead and our shirts untucked. It's just a bad look, and it gives you some level of anxiety to have to rush to work. So why really put yourself in that position? And I think just lastly, you know, if you decide to accept a position with specific hours, at the end of the day, it's your responsibility to yourself, to your family, to your company, your team members, and to your customers to show up on time.
You know, Doug, I have to ask you this question. Do a lot of technicians work for you that constantly show up late?
We do have that problem. We have to talk to them about it and make sure that they understand that when we open the doors, we got to be ready, which means I'm kind of in the Mike Dela Cruz camp, that you got to be there early in order to be on time. We always practice what we preach. And I think the other thing, too, about being on time is that, as Mike got to at the end of his segment there, is it's not a victimless crime. In other words, I think a lot of times we think being late just affects us, and it really affects other people. And that's, I remember when I was younger, I on occasion would be, I'm saying at the very beginning of my career, would be late on occasion. And it, not just in work, but in personal issues, too. Like if I was meeting somebody somewhere, it's a lack of respect. It's a lack of consideration that you're showing for other mm-hmm. people. Yep. And I think that's as important as anything when it comes to being to work on time and being ready for the day. And you got to be, you know, when the gun sounds, you got to run. You can't be putting on your tracksuit when the gun sounds.
Yeah, thank you, Robert Kennedy. Last employee I heard was 20 minutes late on his first day. And he took an extra 50 minutes for lunch. It only got worse from there. I mean, there's the indication. There it is. And so, Doug, well, let me just keep you right here. The number two on the list is making an effort.
Which, you know, that sounds so elementary, right? I mean, it sounds like such a basic skill to have. But I think that showing effort in your job, your commitment to the mission, whatever, and hopefully that's clearly defined and everybody understands what their role is, what they're trying to accomplish every day. But making that effort and demonstrating to everybody else on the team that you're committed to what it is you're trying to do is a great thing to have. And it's an intangible quality that people read and people pick up on. Everybody else in the organization, others in the shop, you're going to know right away. You're going to get a feel for what level of commitment somebody has to the mission. Don't be somebody that gets looked upon as a guy who's got sort of a lax attitude, not taking what it is we're trying to accomplish every day seriously, not focused on their work. I think that's really the primary thing there is make sure that you're leading by example in this sense and showing effort and doing all the things that you're being asked to do. And don't miss things that you're being asked to do, mm-hmm. right? Everything starts off a job, you're new, you're learning, and you can be told, hey, here's the things that you need to do. And then once you're told, make sure that you do them consistently and not having to be told again. And that all has to do with, with bringing a level of effort and concern that everybody else can perceive and see and feel.
So I have a 13-year-old daughter who's pretty active in sports. And, you know, she's like me. We're a little competitive, right? And I remember early on when she started kind of getting into sports, she'd tell me, like, you know, I want to score the most points. And, you know, I want to show you that I can, you know, be the top player. One of the things that she learned from me is I don't come there to see her score the most points. I don't come here to see her be the baddest person on the field. I go there to see her making an effort. And it's important to give 100%. And anything short of that, your team has to carry. Doug made a good point when he talked about leading by example. We often kind of have this tunnel vision when we're doing things. And sometimes we lose sight of the fact that people are actually looking at us. So if there's a lack of effort, you know, particularly if you're like a seasoned service advisor or you've been there a long time, if there's a lack of effort, it really doesn't sit well with other people. It's really not a good example. So I think Doug's right. He hit on a lot of good points.
Very good. Clint, I want to bring you up next and do the number three. Unless you've got any comments on any of these, please, guys, don't be bashful. Just jump right in.
My comment to the first one being on time is something that my dad taught me a long time ago. And it's an old adage: to be early is to be on time, and to be on time is to be late, and to be late is unacceptable. And I think that that's a policy I live by for a long time, and it's worked well for me, and I would encourage others to embrace it. Now talking towards the point of making an effort, I think that that right there is going to be your umbrella topic for this entire show: making an effort. It's an intentionality mindset that you have to have. You must make an effort for all of these 10 points that we're going to talk about. So I'll roll right into being high energy. I love talking about energy, and I'm not one of the guys that like rubs crystals and thinks they, I mean, they'd be really cool if they did, but they don't work for me. So high energy, what does that mean? It doesn't mean 5-hour energy drink. It doesn't mean 16 cups of Charbucks or $5 or whatever you want to say. It means that you have this internal, I call it the internal flame. Do you have the flame or the spark? Do you have that? If you don't, you can acquire it. It doesn't require skill. It requires intentionality and effort. People are drawn towards light, just like a moth to the flame. People are drawn towards others who have a high level of energy. And it does come easy for some folks, and it doesn't come as easy for others. And that's okay to acknowledge that. There is some similarities between high energy and low energy and introvert and extrovert. And I know that some people would say that, hey, I'm an introvert and I can't do that. You can quietly stir the flame. You don't have to be loud. You don't have to be exuberant. Some of the things you can do to add to your energy levels is the first and foremost, like I said, intentionality, or choose enthusiasm. It's a choice. I wake up in the morning, I didn't sleep that good. My back hurts because, well, the gray hair says so. I'm going to be enthusiastic about what I have to do today. I'm going to choose that. Or I can choose to mope about and be Eeyore and come across as that'll never work. And that doesn't work for me, and it won't work for you. So one of the biggest killers of energy is stress. And I believe that if we focus on eliminating stresses in our lives, will have room for more energy. So some of the things that I do, when I was running a shop, one of the greatest stress reducers that we had was humor. I love to have fun. Now, very profitable, very professional fun. You got to be able to goof around and joke and be full of life. That's that spark, that energy, that fire that we need to have. Another thing you can do is exercise. Now, I'm not going to get on a soapbox and tell you that I'm Sir Fit right here. I may not be, but I can tell you that for a lot of guys that work these 8-10 hour shifts and running a shop, or they're a technician or a service advisor, what do you do for lunch? Do you plow down 8,000 calories of grease and sit on your rear, or do you go take a walk? Go out and take a walk around the block. That'll increase your energy level and increase, I think, the positivity that's going to ooze from you. So the last thing would be sleep. Again, not a sleep specialist here. If you're not getting enough, fix that. If you can't, find a place to take a nap on lunch. Some of these things you can do to increase your energy level. And the lastly, I like to wrap things with a quote. This was said by some guy that coached a football team, Cheeseheads or something like that. He said, if you aren't fired up with enthusiasm, you're going to get fired with enthusiasm.
Wow.
I don't know. I think we can turn off the show and we're done.
Yeah.
Mic drop moment.
Yeah, it was.
Absolutely. Wow. Very good. I love that. I love the laughing part, by the way. I have to share that with you. Ann and I love to laugh. And I think that has helped us over these 44 years of marriage. It almost is like, and we don't plan it, that we're always laughing before we, you know, hit the sack at night. There's just something funny that happened during the day, or it's just that we always said we could probably write comedy for shows. You know, just because of the things that happen in our real world. So thank you for bringing up the laughter thing. That was excellent, excellent.
And I think the other thing too that Clint touched on that I think is excellent is creating that work-life harmony, that, you know, you've got to have interests outside work. And whether it's, you know, whether it is working out every day, or it could be playing tennis, or it could be doing, you know, whatever you love. I love music. I go out, I'm hoping to get back out to a live concert one of these days soon. You know, but whatever it is that stirs your, you know, your passions, those are the things that re-energize you. And you've got to block out time to make that happen. And sometimes I think people, we've we've talked about this before, Carm. Sometimes I think people think, oh, you know, you're off doing these things. Well, it requires discipline to go off and do these things. You've got to carve out, it's work. You've got to carve out time and make sure that you're doing the things that do bring great energy to your day and to your work, and have that harmony between, you know, work and life, and having the things that interest you be a part of what you're doing every day.
100%.
Clint, it's just spitting fire over there in Washington, man. You're going to melt all that snow. You hit up a lot of good points. I think my favorite part, something that really resonated with me, what you said, Clint, was like the health and the sleep. I think a lot of us are guilty of that, where we just kind of get focused on our day-to-day routine and really not really worry about so much our health and our sleep. So, you know, there was a period where I started getting into better eating habits, and I would exercise, and I noticed my energy levels would just elevate to the highest degree. I didn't take any supplements or anything like that. It was strictly my diet. I got enough sleep, and you'd be surprised. There was a big change in my energy levels.
Well, good for you. Hey, Mike, we're going to leave you up and take on number four here, having a positive attitude.
Mr. Bubbly over here. I've been known that at conferences. They're like, hey, Mr. Bubbly. But things in life aren't easy, right? They're not always going to go your way. We're human. You know, we have bills. We have relationship issues with kids, and the list goes on. So it's easy to get caught up with life or the issues in life in a work environment. But if we take a hard look at like the impact that we have on people and on the business by having a bad attitude, it really doesn't benefit anybody. In fact, it makes situations worse. Plus, you know, my mom always told me, like, you don't know what someone else is going through, right? Like, what's going on in somebody else's life. You know, you may be having a bad day, but what if someone's parent died, or what if they were just diagnosed with an illness, right? So words and attitude, they're both powerful. You know, what you say to people can either have a positive impact on them, or it could really hurt somebody. So I think I would say, like, do your best to like leave your problems at the door. I know it's difficult, but do your best to leave your problems at the door. We all have issues we're dealing with. You're not the only one. And just be kind. Just be kind to people. Show up with positivity, and you could definitely make the working environment a better place for everyone. It's a really, really good feeling. It's this, they call it like an intrinsic reward. You know, that feeling where you did something really good and had an impact on somebody. It just kind of fills you. Something money can't buy.
One of the things that I really strive to promote in my coaching, I coach service advisors and work with shop owners. And there's a lot of negative things that happen in the day to day in the shop. And I really strive to focus on finding the positive in everything, whether it be a sale you didn't make or a phone call that didn't go well. Those failures, they're the foundation on which your success is built, and you have to have them to get to where you're going. So you've got to view them as a positive thing.
I think the other thing too that I would add is that there are things that do happen during the day. There's failures, there's disappointments, there's things that happen. And one of the things that we always stress among everybody on our team is, if you're going to vent, vent upward, right? Don't vent laterally. And don't vent down. So in other words, there's times, you know, our managing director, David Asquith, who runs our organization, I mean, he may be up against an issue, and there's times where he may pick up the phone and call me and say, hey, man, I just want to vent to you about something that's going on. And now I'm just in, go ahead. Like, just tell me what's happening. And if he wants me to chime in on something, I will. There's times for that. And I guess what I'm saying is, leaders have to understand that that's a responsibility that you have to the organization, that people that work for you, if they've got an issue, you can take them aside, let them vent to you, and then you've got to handle it appropriately. But obviously always let them know, hey, don't be out in the shop, you know, infecting other people, talking about things that didn't go the way they should have, because that's not a good situation. And we have capable people at all levels of our organization that can be there to help you vent those frustrations during the day.
Great point. Thanks for Tarai for hanging out with us all directly from Zimbabwe today. Good to have you here, Tarai. I have a comment about what you said, Mike, about you not really necessarily knowing what's going on in people's lives and why finding a way to say something positive to people. I want to encourage everyone to go out to the web, type in Chick-fil-A, everyone has a story. And if you've never seen that video from Chick-fil-A on Everyone Has a Story, you must see it. It's almost required video for life. And be prepared. I have a hanky with you because it is a very incredible, touching story. In fact, we should share that with our team members at the next meeting. Chick-fil-A, Everyone Has a Story.
You told me about that in Biloxi a couple of years ago, and I watched it, and I keep watching it. So it's a really, really good video.
Incredible. It's an HR video that they show their people, which is what helps generate the kind of culture that they have. I'm having fun, guys. This is great. What a great lesson as this thing becomes a podcast and on YouTube, sir, that people can, you know, that they need a check. Boom, you know, hey, I'm feeling not so perfect. So what kind of talent do I need? None. You just need all this good stuff. Number five, Doug Grills, being passionate.
Passion is a critically important thing to have, for everyone to have every day when they walk through the door. We have three core values. And the first core value that we have is a passion for excellence. And here's what's important to think about when you think about passion is passion involves feeling and emotion. So unlike a lot of the things that we talk about in business, it's not a rational analysis. This is emotion. And this is real desire and liking and loving, whatever it happens to be. The thing that's important about that feeling aspect of passion is that it's something that everybody else sees and they respond to. So your level of passion, your level of belief in what it is that you're doing is infectious. And I think of it a lot of times, we talk about how to answer the phones, right? Having great mm-hmm. phone skills. And they say, hey, you know, you should smile when you answer the phone because the person on the other end of the phone can see that smile. They can feel that smile, even though they can't physically see it. And passion is the same way. When you have that level of desire and drive and concern for something, it's infectious to everyone on the team. Customers feel it. Coworkers mm-hmm. feel it. People that work for you feel it. You know, people that are watching you do what you do. And to watch people have genuine desire and passion for your business, it's one of the most rewarding things I think as an owner you can possibly have. When I'm in meetings and I see people talking about the different things that they're trying to accomplish for my company, it's the greatest feeling in the world. So having passion and having desire and drive, that's something you can bring every day. As Clint said, you can decide to have that and learn more about, if you don't understand the mission well enough, learn more about it, get invested, and then be passionate about what you do.
We're in the sales industry, by the way, guys. Whether you own a shop, whether you're a service advisor, or whether you're a technician, the technician has to sell to the advisor. The advisor has to sell to the customer. And we have to, vice versa, get our employees to do things, and therefore we have to sell to them. To sell without passion is ineffective. In fact, the definition of sales is, at its core, it is the transference of feelings. And if you don't feel a way about a thing, a product, a flush, a belt, something that needs to get done in the shop, a process or procedure that should be followed, if you're not passionate about that, the results, they don't happen.
Doug, you're right. It is, passion is infectious. You're absolutely right. I would never represent something, whether it's a company or just anything, if I'm not passionate about it. And if I'm wearing the jersey of this company, I'm not going to have one foot in and one foot out. So I think to Clint's point, like if you're passionate about something or like the mission, results follow. Like mm-hmm. all you have to do is have your heart in it, right? Results will follow. And what's cool is it's going to follow naturally. It's not like this forced thing where you're just kind of forced to be passionate about this mission. It's like if it's in your heart, results will follow. So really great points, Doug and Clint.
Hey, Carm here. Now we're halfway through. Don't miss out on some of the bonus takeaways from my panel. Hey, how many times have shop owners out there have asked for an enhancement from their shop management system provider, but were left wondering if anyone was listening? Knock, knock. Hey, are you there? If this has been you, it might be time to make a switch. If you've been listening even for a short time, you've probably heard me rave about Shopware, an industry-leading shop management system. What sets Shopware apart is that they truly listen. They are constantly sending out surveys, analyzing results, and implementing improvements. One thing for sure, if you opt for Shopware as your SMS, you won't have to worry about your software becoming outdated. Here's a fun fact. Shopware was founded by an actual shop owner. And when was the last time you saw that? Get up to speed with the best in the business by visiting getshopware.com. Are your competitors ranking higher than you in search? Is your marketing company using plain vanilla recycled content? And does your marketing look like every other shop's and you're not even sure it's working? Powerful, effective marketing is not cookie cutter. It should showcase all of the things that are unique about your business. Don't you think you deserve better results? It's time to make a change. Our good friends at Shop Marketing Pros are past shop owners and industry veterans. They get it. Their process is pretty simple. Listen, create, and do. They spend time getting to know you and create a unique marketing message and then do the heavy lifting for you so you can do what you do best. Run a shop and fix cars. Do yourself a favor. Give your shop the top-notch marketing it deserves. Schedule a call today on the web at shopmarketingpros.com. That's shopmarketingpros.com. Don't wait. Do it now. And here's what's ironic, Doug. I gave you passion as the lead discussion point, and it fell right into, I mean, it's amazing how these talking points are falling right in to who you are and what you do. It's amazing. Clint, body language.
I love this topic. I love it. Now, I am not Italian at all, but body language, body language is extremely important. So let's talk about first impressions real quick, whether it be employee, employer, whether it be customer and advisor, whatever it may be. First impressions, I think, are vital. And they're actually made within the first 7 seconds of contact. They're heavily, heavily influenced by the nonverbal or body language. Having healthy, positive, good body language shows the listener or the other party involved. And so we'll just say the customer. I think that's probably the best example here. It shows your customer that you're engaged, you're interested, and you're approachable. All very important aspects of being in the customer service industry. In fact, in every shop that I work with, I do my best to mandate what's called the one-step policy. One-step policy is that the customer is allowed 1 foot in the door, and it is a requirement for any and all employees to acknowledge. And it's mostly nonverbal. It's a, hey, I'm on the phone, and a wave or an eye contact or a thumbs up. It's huge to have correct and positive body language. So eye contact and acknowledgement. We talked about that. Smiling. Doug, you alluded to smiling on the phone. Of course, smiling in person, I think it's vital that we do that. You know, are you happy? God, if so, please tell your face, because if not, what does that tell the customer? Your posture. Now, this is a huge one, especially as we age, right? We tend to slouch. Stand up straight. Sit up straight. It indicates that you're again engaged and ready for conversation. How about arms and hands? When it comes to body language, what do we do with our arms and hands? And some of this stuff is old school sales, right? We don't cross our arms. That means you're guarded. You don't disappear your hands into your pockets. No, that means you're disinterested. In fact, it is actually proven that hand gestures and an animated demonstration of thought really is more effective than hands at your side. So hats off to the Italians. I think it's imperative that we utilize the things that were given to us. And then there's some things you shouldn't do, right? There's anything above the head is forbidden, right? We don't do the wiggly wavy arm guy, right? We also don't point. Pointing can be taken as aggressive. And also make sure that your nonverbal cues line up with your verbal cues. Make sure that you match, because it gets a little weird when they don't. And really, I think that if we can focus on this, the nonverbal and the body language, it's four times more impactful than anything else you can do. So I would encourage you to do it.
At my former company, we took a Sprinter van around the country to visit shops. I think Carm remembers this, over 1,000 shops. And the first thing that I would do as I would drive up is I would sort of put myself in the shoes of a customer. right? Before I went to every shop. And Carm, I know you followed our journey, right? But I would put myself in the shoes of every customer. So, you know, I'd look at the neighborhood. Was there ample parking? When I walked in the door, was I greeted? Were there old magazines from 2008 sitting on the in the lobby? I would analyze this. But one of the things about body language, it was pretty interesting. It didn't happen often, but when it did, I was surprisingly just kind of caught off guard. I'd walk into a shop and the service advisor would kind of be slouching or got the feet kicked up on the table, or the technician was, you know, on a stool eating a burger or whatever, eating lunch. Body language, like, it really, that experience really put that into perspective about body language. It really does tell a story. And like Clint said, you know, about first impressions, and I know it's cliche, but you never get a second chance to make a first impression. Some believe that, some don't, but I'm a big believer in that.
Here was my thought, you know, about body language and how important the face is. And what have we had since a year now, huh? And so if I was going to smile, so I was practicing this the last few months, trying to smile so hard under the mask so that people could see it in my eyes. And then finally, to your comment, Clint, about the importance of body language, if you're in listening mode, means us Italians have to sit on our hands. That gets us into listening mode, right? And if you're in listening mode, body language is a very big part. They can't see how hard your ears are working until they see how your body is working. And so you need to be lean forward. You need to be engaged. You have to use those eyes for eye contact as part of, you know, your whole body language. Great listening skills requires good body language.
These guys nailed it, actually, to be honest with you. I mean, they totally nailed it. And body language is important. And I think Clint's point about nonverbal cues do so much of the communicating that we do every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, the words that we say matter, and we talk about that. So the words that you say do matter.
Yep.
But, you know, when it comes to first impressions and those things that people, you know, that if you have like the book Blink, Malcolm Gladwell, Blink,
yep,
where he talks about they make people, exactly to his point, Clint's point, people make that read in seconds. And, you know, and think about all of the different interactions that we've had throughout an entire lifetime. And we take that mass, that sum of all of that experience, and that informs our impressions of people. Mm-hmm. And all of that really is nonverbal, frankly. So these guys nailed it. They're spot on.
This is a phenomenal, phenomenal episode so far. I just can't wait to see how it's going to continue here. Mike Dela Cruz, being coachable.
You know, I think being coachable goes for everyone in the shop, including the owner and manager. First of all, like, there should be no ego when people are trying to come together to achieve a common goal. That's a fact. Nobody is above anybody else, you know, when you're trying to build something together. I meet with my sales team regularly at Broadly, and, you know, we'll do call reviews. We give feedback, and we get so much value out of it because we're able to listen for things that we could have done differently. As long as I've been in the auto aftermarket, there are still things I learned today, you know, and I'll embrace that. I'll continue to learn. Not to ever be perfect, but to, you know, be able to absorb new information that I could use to either, you know, further my career or my relationships with other people in the industry, or whatever it is that you want to do. But that's what I'm going to do. Even as a manager at Broadly, like, I'm going to allow myself to be coachable. You know, you could be the most seasoned salesperson at the shop, or the seasoned person at the shop. But remember, when, you know, what got you where you are today is not enough to get you where you need to be tomorrow. So it's important for all of us to be coachable. And we really need to allow ourselves to do that and understand how we can get better, either individually or collectively as a group. Sometimes we just need to be reminded of that and take a step back. And that's okay. That's not a bad thing.
So I love this topic as well. And I think Mike's points are spot on, that everybody has to be open to being coachable. So I'm going to jump in and add the 11th item, which to me is be humble. Be humble. And I think humility and shows an ability to be able to be open to learning, to be open to new ideas. We very often think about people in performing scenarios, high performance scenarios, where they're jumping on the counter, they're being asked to do something that's challenging. We want them to have the utmost confidence, right? We talked about that before, having passion and confidence. And I think sometimes that leads to a bravado, a false sense of, like, I've got to have the answer to everything. And so we can't get stuck in that mindset. Mm-hmm. We've got to be able to understand that there's always opportunity for learning and growth. And, you know, in our organization, we're a learning organization. We spend a lot of time coaching, developing, training. And part of what comes with that is be humble, be open, be humble, check it at the door, just recognize. And that goes for everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, me, anybody. That's sort of the tie on to being coachable is just be open and don't think that you've always going to have the right answer or that you can't make a mistake or you can't learn a better way to do something.
Absolutely. I think that being humble and being coachable, like you said, Doug, that's great. Those two go hand in hand. Being a coach, so I'm a little bit partial to this topic, right? I look at being somebody who's coachable is like a lake, a body of water that has acquired knowledge over some time and filled up. And they seem to be full of themselves or full of knowledge. And the reality is they've become stagnant because coaching is not just pouring in wisdom, but it is a flow. A fresh flow of the new in and the old and the stagnant out. And we've got to keep that flow going and use humility to understand that we may never be full, but we're always going to try.
Thank you for adding be humble as our 11th, because I talked to these guys earlier in the week and I says, hey, if you got any bonuses to add, let's do it. And thank you for putting in the be humble thing. We in this industry, guys, and I know you can see it everywhere on social media, you know, everybody's got that strong opinion left or strong opinion right. And I'm not talking politics. I'm just talking about how to run a business, right? And how to lead people. We're this wide. And if we would just be more humble and be more learned, we would be smarter and better. Why do you have to choose a particular side? Be objective. Doug Grills, you're up next. Doing a little extra doesn't require talent.
Doing a little extra, it touches on so many of the things that we've already covered, right? When it comes to having a positive attitude and bringing energy and being passionate. And the question that you have to ask yourself is, are you going to be the person who is willing to do something over and above what they're being asked to do?
Yeah.
Because really, when you think about it, doing exactly what you're asked to do, I mean, that's like the price of entry, right? I mean, yeah, of course, you've got to do the things we're asking you to do.
You know what I call that, Doug? I call that living the job description. I mean, come on, you got to go beyond that.
Yeah.
Exactly. Are you willing to extend yourself beyond and push yourself? And maybe that involves being uncomfortable to some degree and wanting to learn and wanting to grow, but being able to come in and take initiative. And when you see something that needs to be done, are you the guy that tells somebody else, hey, that needs to be done? Or are you somebody that's willing to step up and do it yourself? And I think that, again, like all these different topics that we've touched on, everybody around you can see that about you, right? Mm-hmm. They'll get that sense of, are you somebody who's willing to roll up your sleeves and jump in? There is nothing that anybody should be afraid or unwilling to do when it comes to day-to-day shop activity, right? I mean, to me, it's like when somebody's thinking, hey, that's not my job, not something I get involved in. I understand there's efficiency and productivity and there's a time and place for staying in your lane, but showing the organization and the other people that you work with that you're willing to go outside that and take initiative, that's doing the little extra that I think makes a difference every day.
I think we've all experienced either, you know, calling a customer service representative, or maybe we have service providers that we work with and we work with our client services manager. Yeah, they could easily stick to the job description and just meet those expectations. But when they exceed those expectations and do a little extra, go above and beyond, how does that feel, right? It's a really good feeling when that customer support person goes above and beyond to help you out. So I think the end result really is, what does it do? It creates that great customer experience and much more.
Okay, we have two more to go, and who knows what other bonuses we may get here on our Town Hall Academy, 10 Things That Require Zero Talent. Number 9, Clint, being prepared.
Being prepared requires zero talent, but it requires 100% effort. You have got to be proactive to be prepared. Would you guys agree with me?
Absolutely.
The Bishop T.D. Jakes said, preparation time is never wasted time. In fact, you can't have great recitals if you don't have powerful or great rehearsals. We have got to pour into ourselves in order to pour into others. That is why being prepared is, I think, one of the key elements in what we do day to day in the automotive. How do you serve others when you're ill-prepared? You can't. You won't. It won't happen. So preparing yourself, what it will do is, it's an essential and not optional thing that we must do to, first and foremost, reduce stress. Talked a little earlier about reducing the stresses in our lives. Imagine going into a sales call where you have no idea what you're about to sell. That's not going to work. It doesn't benefit you. It doesn't benefit the customer. Prepare yourself physically. Again, touching on a couple of things that tie together. Are you prepared for today physically? Are you well rested? Are you healthy? Are you putting a little bit of time in for exercise? Are you eating right? Those things, I don't apologize for touching on them again, because I think they're key and they're important. You can't be a powerful, effective, passionate employee if you are sick and weak and tired. It just doesn't go together. It won't happen. So take a minute. As the philosopher Oprah Winfrey said, treat yourself. Take care of yourself, guys. You must. So we have to prepare ourselves physically. What about mentally? Mentally is huge. When you fail to anticipate what is about to happen, and that's preparation, is anticipation, it puts you at a competitive disadvantage. Now, I'm all about being competitive. I love being competitive. And I think it's a healthy thing to have within our shops to a degree, to be competitive. It drives success. It can drive profit. There's nothing wrong with that. And I don't want to be at a disadvantage for that. And neither does anybody else here on this panel, or I think anybody listening. So prepare yourself mentally. Know the facts. Know what you're about to get into. That takes time and effort. Prepare yourself emotionally. How many of us come to work and we've rested well, we've eaten well, but emotionally, we're not ready? These are some of the things that we've got to think about and put effort into. Again, no talent, but effort to prepare yourself emotionally for your day, whether that's running a shop, working out in the shop, whatever it may be. You've got to prepare yourself. You know, success doesn't come from what you do occasionally. It comes from what you do consistently. And I think that that really is key to every single one of these 9 or 10 or now 11 points, is you must be consistent. Whether you practice, drill, rehearse, whatever you want to say, consistency is key. And if you don't feel prepared, if you feel like you're not ready, I'm going to pitch this. Who's your coach? Who is holding you accountable? Who is helping you to prepare for your day and for your success? By failing to prepare, you're preparing to fail. And that was Benjamin Franklin, by the way. That's not me. I'm not that smart.
And I'll just quickly add to showing up unprepared. It's a very bad look, right? But not only that, it sets you and it sets the company back. It really does. When you're unprepared and you lose so much productivity as a result of that, kind of hindering that mission, that common goal.
I mean, think about an athlete, right? A professional athlete. I mean, he mentioned music, but in sports, I mean, you're going to practice the things that you need to do, that you need to execute on the game field or on the court. Yep. And why are you doing that? Because you're trying to create a situation where when you're in the moment, when you're in the heat of battle, you're relying on muscle memory, right? Because you've already thought about these things that you're going to do and say. So whether it's how you answer the phone or how you handle a customer at the counter, mm-hmm. or what it is you're going to do in terms of managing the shop operation, the idea that we could just step onto the court and be superstars is a ridiculous idea, right? I mean, when you think of it in those terms, you would never walk out onto a court without any preparation or any practice and think that you could play a game with any level of competence. So what do we have to do? We've got to spend time practicing the skills that we need to be successful, so that when we're executing in the moment, success becomes something that's much more elementary and much, much easier to achieve than it would be if we just think, hey, who needs to practice? We'll just show up and do it.
Yeah, and Doug, to that point, you don't rise to the occasion. You won't rise to the occasion. You'll fall to the level of your training. It is key that you train and prepare.
Mm-hmm. And this subject goes to being on time too, right? So like we talked about us, being there early, right? I think somebody said like being there early is being on time. Before the shop opens, right? Like is a coffee brewed? Like Some of shops have like, you know, refreshments. Are they out? Are the reports from yesterday out? Do we have our lost customer report that we're going to call today? So that by the time you open, you're prepared. Mm-hmm. So I think punctuality kind of bleeds into, you know, being prepared.
Thank you, guys. This was wonderful. Our number 10 is having a strong work ethic. And let me start this off amongst a group discussion here. It was my grandfather many, many, many years ago who said, Carm, you've got to always give your employer 110% or more. I never forgot what my grandfather John told me. Do what you say you're going to do and always give it. And for me, it didn't matter what I ever jumped into, but I had to give it more than a yeoman's effort. I had to give it more. Don't like the job you're in? You still need to live the strong work ethic until you decide to make a change. And that's the thing. I think people give up much too soon and forget what their responsibilities are in their... there's a reputation that you're always building. And I believe that having a strong work ethic, that you may not be the best. And we were talking about, you know, well, I'm not great at this. Well, let me go out and practice and learn this and be better at it. Well, that shows a great work ethic, that you're willing to invest in yourself, in the team, and in the company, no matter if you're happy or not, if you're on the fast track. So many people today get the opportunities that they get because they've had and delivered to their employer, their family, their friends, a strong work ethic. Don't put the word work in there to think that it's always about work. It's about life's work ethic.
I think that work ethic, A, is not a canceled phrase. I think it's okay to say. And it is something that is missing in today's culture. It is something that I look for and do not see, unfortunately, in a lot of the younger generation. And I don't know where the collapse or the failure is. But to find somebody who shows up to work on time, early, every day, and is eager to learn, maybe not the best, say, technician, maybe not the greatest service advisor, but man, they're passionate and they want to get better and they're open to training and they're receptive and they're humble. I'll take that guy any day, absolutely any day, because it is a rare thing to find somebody who will give of themselves, which in turn pours back into themselves, and it compounds. It's compound interest, not just self-interest.
I think for people that are, you know, that are involved in the day-to-day at your shop, having a strong work ethic and demonstrating that they're committed to their job and to their purpose in the shop is important. Mm-hmm. I can also say, though, and this may sound a little counter to what we're talking about, work ethic is extremely important. And you will find that people with high work ethic tend to be those people that are also very successful at what they do, right? Like the yeah. Thomas Jefferson, like, hey, I rely on luck, and I find the harder I work, the more luck I have. So there's no question about that. But the other thing too to remember is that at the end of the day, working hard is important, but generating results, being productive, making things happen, producing on behalf of the organization, that's points on the board, and that matters too. So yeah. I don't want to sound counter to the argument, because I obviously believe in strong work ethic, but it's also about what are you able to do and accomplish at the end of the day, because a lot of energy and motion that doesn't produce the desired result is not what any of us is after. All these other things we talked about, being coachable and being listened, mm-hmm. Apply that work ethic in the right direction that yields positive results for your company.
Absolutely.
Wow, what a great, great episode this has been so far. Do any of my great friends here have any bonus?
I'd actually like to give a shout out to the Honorable Bill Nalu, who commented, how hard is it to be kind? Oh my gosh. Yep. What in the world? How did we miss that? But be a good yep. human. You can be on time and you can be trainable and coachable. But if you're a jerk, that doesn't work. Be kind. So Bill, thank you for that.
And I would like to add, because I've mentioned this on podcasts with Carm in the past, is that I am a huge believer in all of these things that we talked about today, and being open and able to learn and grow and develop. Because I love, one of my favorite books that I'm going to share with everybody watching and listening today is Talent is Overrated. It's called Talent is Overrated. It's by Jeff Colvin. And I love that book because what it really talks about is everything we've covered, which is 90% of what we do in life is learned behavior, right? So this idea that you're a natural born leader, or that you've got these skills, or you've got this talent, is really a fallacy. And the book talks about people that are good at what they do are prepared and they practice, they're committed, they have high energy, they bring passion, they're on time, they have good body language, they have all the things we've talked about, and that's what makes them successful.
Yep.
It's not because they were born some way and they just happen to be natural sales guys. Like, I hear that, like, oh, he's a nat, nah. You know what? Those are skills that you can learn. And if you have all of these great attitudes, these great traits that you bring to the job every day, you're going to be successful. I guarantee you.
Love it, Doug. So
this
true.
This has been such an exciting podcast. And Doug, those words just really fired me up. So I'm really excited to get back to my team. But, you know, we covered so much. Like, my bonus is just don't be afraid to check yourself. Look yourself in the mirror, right? It's funny because for the last year, we've been trapped in this like virtual world, right? So no longer in the office, we're home now. So we find, at least I find myself looking myself in the mirror and giving myself to Clint's guy, the Vince Lombardi speech, right? Like having to kind of rah-rah pump myself up, right? So I would just add that, you know, if you represent a company, be proud of and do what's expected. If it's not the right place for you, then, you know, that's something you have to really think about. But if you're there, give 100% effort, because anything less than that, like I said, your team has to carry. Don't forget that it's not always about you. There's always other people involved in the journey. So it's a really big piece of this puzzle. But just think about the stuff and you'll all do well.
Wow, this was great. You know what? I had so much fun doing this, and I think we have provided one heck of an elixir education. You know, it's almost like, where can I find myself 45 minutes to get recharged, re-energized, refocused, realigned? It's kind of like going to a chiropractor, this audio show was. Thank you so much, Doug Grills, AutoStream Car Care, Baltimore, Washington 7, multi-shop operation. Clint White, service advisor, coach at Shop Vision. And all around nice guy. Thanks, Clint, for being here. And Mike Dela Cruz, National Sales Manager at Broadly. Good to have you here, guys. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, Carm, thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.